Tuesday, December 5th, 2006, Upon Further Review, episode number 26. That's right, it's 26 shows of Upon Further Review. It's 6 months. It's half a year. It's 1/200th of a century. It's 1/2000th of a millennium. It's getting a little bit scary, and so it's time for me to stop. Okay, Upon Further Review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
And welcome to episode number 26. No particular anniversary for this one, I guess. Although I guess it's half a year now. It's officially half a year's worth of episodes. So we do have that. Okay. It's always something. 27's not going to have anything,
right,
though. I can't picture anything coming out of 27, to be honest.
27 and 28 won't have anything. And then 29 will be, we're almost 30. And then
right,
we'll be 30.
And then
31 through 48 will be nothing, and
right, it'll be cares. 37's huge for no reason at all.
Well, we can make it huge.
We can make it huge.
We can review 37.
That's true. The number 37. We haven't reviewed any numbers yet.
No, we haven't.
For that. So we want to say hello to everybody out there, and thank you guys as usual for tuning in. We want to thank an increasing number of people who have been contributing. For example, we got an email from a couple of listeners last week. First of all, Avram, we want to thank from Feed Me Bubby, who just continues to give us more and more stuff. The latest is that he has this new video up of his latest episode of the show, and we're in the middle. He's got this new like video promo for us, which just shows our picture, like, you know, zooming towards the screen in this very dramatic fashion with the promo over it. So
it's in the famous Fricasee episode.
Yes.
So I think we've made it, Greg.
Yep, we've arrived at this point. So we want to thank him for that. We also want to thank Drum Intellect. I actually met this person when I was over at Israelisms, commenting on their weblog a couple times.
Drum Intellected.
Drum Intellected, I guess. Anyway, sent an email to us and said that he, or she, actually, I don't know if it's a he or she, and said that he or she suggested episode 23 to a coworker who's extremely far to the left. They liked, DI likes our show, thought that we had our worst show when we were talking about the Iraq and politics thing, and thought we had our best show at Thanksgiving because DI disagrees with us politically a little bit, which is fine. You know, that's cool. All different strokes for different folks. But so we want to thank him for contributing, or her for contributing. We want to find out if you're a him or a her, so please let us know.
Does it matter, Greg?
No, I just would like to know so I don't have to keep going he, she, or it. You know?
Really wish English had that third person.
Oh, yeah, like
singular.
A gender-neutral pronoun. Absolutely.
I really wish we had that.
Yep, absolutely. So do my students, apparently, from the way they misuse it all. But we want to thank everybody for contributing, and we've seen the numbers continue to rise, so please continue to spread the word. We appreciate it.
So we told you guys that we were going to sell some things on eBay through one of those We Sell For You things.
Yes.
And so far, knock on wood, it's been working out.
Yes, we've actually sold some stuff. We have not sold everything. The piece of belly lint that I was trying to sell did not go over particularly well.
We did not try to sell belly lint. When we dropped the stuff off, she was very particular around what things she thought was going to sell and what things weren't. So I have
belly lint.
Lots of crystal to sell if anyone wants to buy it, because she wouldn't take it.
She's like, no crystal for us, huh?
No, so either someone needs to buy it from me, or we need to have a bunch of friends get married so we can
give it away. Right, exactly. So anyway, that worked out. So we've got three things, as usual, on the docket for tonight. We're going to start out by reviewing Amazon.com. We figured it's been a little while since we've talked about something of this nature, and we thought it was time to bring
it up. Also, the holiday seasons are coming, and Amazon.com is a major site for that.
And we are here for you, dear listeners, to give you guidance at this time of trouble. So that's one thing. Then we're going to move on to review Poker Stars. This is where you earn the money to buy the things for gifting or lose it all for Amazon. So we're going to talk about Poker Stars, which is an online poker site. And then we're going to conclude in our podcast segment by talking about Planet Retcon Radio, which is really a series of podcasts, but the major one is Stargate Cafe, I think. But anyway, it's all on the Planet Retcon Radio Network.
Right.
So let's start by talking a little bit about Amazon.com. As everybody, I think, will know at this point, this is kind of the archetypal internet retailer, I think. Mm-hmm. They were one of the originals. They started out largely on the basis of books and selling books and things like that. like that, but they've since expanded to everything. Electronics, you know, apparel. There's even been people who have started to sell things that you might find on eBay otherwise, right. Like, you know, different
it's little
gadgets
and everything
and places. And so,
kind of place.
Right. They're actually located, aren't they located in Seattle, I think? Or isn't their headquarters out of Seattle, I believe?
Most likely, since most great things come from Seattle.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Right. So anyway, no, but yeah, so that's, I think they're located
in Seattle.
But with
Amazon, it's like an everything place. You want, they sell items, or it's like a big, huge search engine for things all that you can find over the internet.
Yep.
So you'll go in and say, I want to find watches. And then you'll go in and it will give you watches from a number of different sites. So like one time I bought my winter jacket through Amazon.com, and technically it was, I think, like an L.L. Bean jacket. Through L.L. Bean, might even been their website, but it's through Amazon to L.L. Bean. And so that's just something that Amazon does. But with Amazon, you do kind of need to know what you're looking for or the area that you want to browse. It's not going to, it doesn't have a lot of kind of nifty user-friendly things to assist you on trying to figure out the gift.
No,
it's a place you go if you know kind of what you want to look for.
That's true. Although Amazon is actually surprisingly good, I've found, you know, those recommending things, you know, where if you like something,
yeah.
Things for you. It's very good at recommending stuff that would be in that same ballpark.
Right, but you have to have a starting point.
You have to have a starting point. I think that's true.
Have an account, then periodically, if you agree to this feature, you might get emails saying Amazon has some new recommendations for you, or they have a little gold box where you can get gold box points, and you get to go in there and they'll have deals for you that are specific to kind of your desires and things that you've purchased.
It is interesting too, because in some cases I bought things for my
right.
mother and other things, here are the quick picks. Neverwinter Nights Kingmaker expansion pack, okay. Author's Guide to Scholarly Publishing, I can see that. Bryn Terfel Sings the Favorites, that's
right.
From my mom. Othello the movie, that's why, you know, favorite Welsh choirs, again, that's from the Bryn Terfel thing. So, you know, it doesn't
that
always,
is the only problem. If you buy gifts for other people, it's going to give you suggestions for that. But that's fine, because then you might have suggestions for those gifts for those other people again, because presumably you have to buy more than one gift each year passes.
Here's the thing about Amazon. I think that number one, I've always thought that their prices are sort of mid-range. You know, they're not cheaper than everything. They're not more expensive than everything. But what I always liked about Amazon is that every time I've dealt with them, I've never had any screw up in terms of shipping, or in terms of something taking way longer than I wanted, or in terms of, you know, the sort of little irritations that you get with some online sites. And I like to do, if I do online shopping, I like to do the online shopping through Amazon, because it's just one central source. And as Clea said, they can root out to a lot of other, you know, external merchants. And whenever I've had customer service things that have come up, there was one time when I had ordered a game, this a couple years ago, and it never arrived at my place. And I'm pretty sure it was stolen. So I basically called about it, and they had a new one shipped out to me that night. That night, they shipped out a new one to me, and I had it in like 2 days. It was ridiculous. So they're very, very good about that kind of stuff. And I think they're probably large enough now that they don't even sweat that stuff. Like, they figure most people are going to be honest, so they just send out the stuff to solve it. But
now,
I was impressed.
Some people might be reacting, no, that's not the experience I had. But I want to make a clear distinction between purchasing things from Amazon and purchasing things through Amazon by actual sellers. Because when you go to a particular item, it will tell you can buy it for new or you can buy it used. And in those instances, usually you're buying it from another seller. And then when you do that, you have, you know, that seller in mind with respect to when it might be shipped to you, when you might get it.
Mm-hmm.
And that can vary. When I was in graduate school, I tried on a few occasions to get books really cheap through Amazon.com. And it works, but what I had to keep in mind, and what I would remind my students the one semester I taught, is if you do that, you need to order far enough in advance, because there's going to be a delay.
Right. And we actually had a gift that we ordered for somebody.
Right.
That it took
Christmas.
For it. And one Christmas it took forever as well.
Yeah.
But that's the eBay effect. That's really when you're using Amazon for sort of an eBay accessor. If you order it directly from Amazon, this never happens. And if you order it from Amazon through a retailer, like a well-established retailer that's just sort of routing things through Amazon, that's fine. But yeah, if you're selling it through like Joe Superseller, then, you know, you're running the risk of what you would run on eBay. But I agree with you. I don't think that's so much a problem. problem with Amazon as it is a problem with, you know, some of the people that they deal with. I guess they could cut down a little bit on the people that they deal with. That might cut down slightly in their selection, but it might improve that customer service experience. I don't know, but
they have a rating system. So supposedly, you know, the rating system is, you know, as long as people are going back on and rating the people that they've dealt with, presumably you can go by with the high ratings.
Yeah.
But, you know, even that, you know, I've usually gone with high ratings people and there is a delay.
Yeah.
Because they just take longer. I don't know if it's because they do the cheapest shipping they can because you're buying it for a book for $4. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure about that either. The other thing about Amazon is I have often used Amazon when I'm ordering books for classes for students of mine, and I will often use them to sort of get a sense of what the ISBN numbers are and things like that, because they give you a lot of detail mm-hmm. about when it was published, the kinds of things that are sort of specific to the publishing industry, you know, what year it was published,
you know, the other editors
and things like that. It's a good resource for that stuff.
It's
However,
easy.
One thing that's an issue is that if you're looking for something which is particularly unusual, let's say that you're looking for a BBC movie, like for example, I've been looking for a Shakespeare movie, Measure for Measure. By the way, if anybody out there happens to know this randomly, I would love to get the BBC version of Measure for Measure, a Shakespeare play. I have not been able to track it down anywhere without spending like $400 directly from the BBC, which I'm not going to do. Things like that, Amazon is not going to have. But when you get that far into it, you're sort of stretching beyond what Amazon was originally planning to do anyway. So, but I'm just warning you, although it is a lot of things you can get there,
but
some of the unusual stuff.
Technically, what Amazon was famous for was the hard to find items you could get at Amazon. But I guess not everything.
Right.
Like, don't think because it's not an Amazon, it doesn't exist. Because I think for many years, Amazon was famous for you could find it at Amazon. It might take forever, but they'll have it there at least listed. That's not necessarily the case.
Okay.
Because Greg actually has particular experiences with this, with his father had a printing press, a poetry press. And so we got a little bit of kind of a firsthand view of what it's like to be someone to have their items sold on Amazon. Not everyone wants to do it. Not everyone wants to agree to the contract that you have to agree to have your items sold.
Yeah, although that's true. Although that was really stubbornness on my father's part, which was sort of a fear of technology, and I didn't agree with him about that. I think he should have just gone ahead and done it. Because they do. They take a fair amount of money out of... They take a big chunk or a significant chunk out of it if you retail through them. But they're also, obviously, a massive source. So, you know, if you go through them, you're going to get correspondingly more attention. And that, you know, that's something that has to be taken into account, too, that you're going to get that much more exposure. So there is a way, by the way, to be able to sell things on Amazon. When we started looking at selling our CD, we looked at CD Baby, and Amazon also had something which they did, but it was sort of convoluted, and we decided that we were just more interested in going with CD Baby. So my sense of it is that for sellers, it may be a little bit more complex, but obviously for buyers, and we're
talking about the
buyer end of things, that's more of an issue. I still do think, though, that the exposure might still be worth it in these cases for sellers, but, you know, it's just something you have to consider.
Right. My point was just simply that it is going to be a decision but for the seller as to whether or not it's worth it for them. And then if they decide it's not worth it for them, then it's not going to be on Amazon. So it's not going to necessarily have every item.
Yeah, okay. That seems logical. The other thing that they'll sometimes do is you'll have people who will have created lists and things like that related to the items that you're looking at. So they'll say, okay, you're looking at this DVD or you're looking at this item. Here's a list that I've put together of movies or books or whatever that fit into this particular category or description, which is kind of a neat thing.
Yeah, so. And I like the ratings. I like the comments. I usually find that they're pretty good. They're not like some sites where you have to wonder whether or not there are ad people going on and speaking about the product.
Yeah.
I love being able to use Amazon to read little excerpts of books. When I'm thinking about what books I want to rent from the library, it's a good resource from that. I mean,
now they're controversial, some of these things. I mean, the little reviews especially are controversial. I've seen some of them that are that just demonstrate people that don't know what they're doing, just sort of blathering because there's no editorial control. But if you consider that there's a lot of reviews on them, you can get a sense of sort of the consensus of what people think, and that can then give you an idea of where to go from there. But I would not take what you find on there as gospel. I do think as sort of a broad, what are the people thinking kind of thing. I think it's worth it for them.
Yeah, you don't want to read just one.
Yeah, definitely. Unless it's a good one and it's my book.
Okay. Anyway, moving on. So what's our rating of Amazon.com?
I would say that Amazon is probably an 8, I would say.
An 8, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I think Amazon is probably an 8. I mean, you know, maybe your experience would drag it down to a 7.
Yeah, 7.
Maybe that's fine. Okay, that's fine. I have no problem with that. So 7 out of 10 for Amazon.com, which, by the way, you can find at amazon.com. Okay, next on the docket is PokerStars. And you can find this, or you can find the software for it, at www.pokerstars.com. Now, by way of full disclosure here, I do play poker online. This one, PokerStars, is done legally. Apparently, everything they've said is that it's legal to do it, and so that's cool. And I more or less play poker with friends and will occasionally play it. It's the kind of thing that's good to play when I'm doing other things that I don't need to concentrate fully on the screen. You know, if I'm like sorting things in the office or something, it's good to be able to play a game. And basically what it is it's a client software that you download, and then you're able to hook on to their poker site, which is basically a huge virtual poker room where you've got literally tens of thousands of people playing all different kinds of pokers at any given time. I've got a lot of free money rooms where they give you a certain amount of what they call free money chips, and you just play for basically play money. And then obviously the big thing that people try to get to is where you have real money, and you can buy in with a lot of easy ways to do it. And once you've bought in, you can spend 50 cents, $1, $1.50, $2, and then on up to where some people will pay heads up things for $10,000.
Wow.
Which is crazy. Like two person heads up and they're playing a poker tournament online for $20,000. Like, it's just, that's staggering. I'm more in the like $5 range, you know, so I'm not in that level yet, but I, you know, basically got into it because I was playing with friends. But I found that it's really enjoyable because of the way that the whole thing is set up and designed, and it is a good way to learn more about poker. I'm not a huge poker fan, but I like it. And some of my friends, I mean, my friend Russ just won $500 in a tournament. It's the kind of thing where people, if you're good at poker, it can, or even if not good at poker, if you're learning, you can learn through this. And if you're good at poker, it's the kind of thing where you can actually win some money doing that. So that's kind of neat.
Yeah, I found it pretty user-friendly. I played with it for a little bit, like a year ago, and I found it was easy to do, easy to maneuver. The tables fill up really quickly, like some of the tables,
yeah.
The good tables fill up really quickly, and that's a little frustrating. It'd be nice if you could put yourself on a queue, and then the next time spot opens up, you would automatically get a seat on that table.
Although it's more frustrating when you can't get a table. I've found people say, like, when they don't fill up at all. Like, there are some sites where it just takes forever for a game to get started. So I guess that's the other flip side, is that at least
you
get games
going. Yeah,
well,
I've never had that problem. I've always had to, double click it.
It's true.
Now it's full.
It's true.
That's the problem I had. Maybe it's because of the type of game I play would always be the case. So it'd be nice if they had some other options there. But, you know, and it's very easy and still quite competitive to play the free money ones where you're just playing, as it said, Greg said, with like fake chips.
Yep.
People usually play fairly legitimately in that. So it's not like they just screw it and I'll just, you know, play however I want to play. They actually play some serious poker in those times. So it's still a good opportunity to learn how to play the game.
Mm-hmm. And PokerStars is well known for being a place that's gotten a lot of people their start. In fact, two people started out on PokerStars. Probably the most famous one, I think, is Chris Moneymaker in 2003, who bought into the World Series of Poker, and you guys have heard of this, the big thing that they have on ESPN where people win like millions of dollars or something. He bought in through PokerStars. I think he did like a $15 buy-in or something, and then next thing you know, he's won like, you know, $3 million or something like that because he ended up winning the World Series of Poker. So the sort of read on PokerStars is that they tend to have, of the online poker rooms, more legit players. Now, that's if you're going in there just hoping to grab a bunch of people who don't know how to play so you can take money from them, that's not as easy to do. But if you're talking about something where you really want to learn how to play, then I think it is positive for that. One of the things that PokerStars does very well also is the interface is very clear, easy to understand. You're able to get in and out of games relatively quickly.
Right.
And the sort of money buy-in and takeout is very painless. You know, you buy in through something called NetTeller, which is a separate thing. NetTeller will deposit directly into your PokerStars account, and then when you cash out, I actually just cashed out a little bit of money the other day, you just click cash out and it refunds right back to your NetTeller account. I mean, like, so it takes no time at all to do it. It's very simple, and it's all managed, by the way, by the Royal Bank of Scotland, which is not only a long-term financial institution, but is not in the United States, which therefore makes it apparently fully legal to do this. So, and they have little promotions, like they have the Win the Aston Martin 2007 going on right now, where like you can buy into a tournament, which is going to be happening. I think it's actually happening this weekend, and the winner of that tournament gets the $200,000 Aston Martin, which is, that's pretty neat. I mean, they have little things like that. They have all these satellites that take you to like the European poker tour tournaments like Copenhagen and things like that. And so it's pretty neat in that regard. Now, you know, if if you don't like poker, you're clearly not going to like this. And if you...
if you have any kind of addiction history,
yeah, that's
please
true.
Stay clear.
That's true, because it's gambling. I mean, is what it is. It's not just gambling. It's gambling with skill involved. I mean, poker, I think, can be fun. But yeah, I mean, you obviously have to... if you're somebody who has trouble with these sorts of things and staying off of these things, then obviously stay away from the site. But I think if you don't do that, and if you like playing poker on occasion, I think it's fun to do. And you can also... it's also, like Clea said, not just the play money chips. If you play for, like, 50 cents, I mean, that's really not a big deal, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's when you see people going in routinely for $25 buy-ins and $50 and $100, and then, like I said, $10,000 buy-ins. That's a little bit crazy. Mm-hmm. The other thing I should mention is that as you play more games, you accumulate what they call frequent player points. Mm-hmm. And when you get enough frequent player points, you can actually enter into these other tournaments for free. You can enter some big, big tournaments depending on how many you have.
Right.
Some of them require, like, thousands of frequent player points, and I've heard people are like, oh, yeah, well, I just use a couple thousand frequent player points. Well, it takes a long... I think the most I've ever had is like 250 after I've been playing for like 2 years. So this always amazes me. There's always people who play 10 times more than normal humanity would be able to play. So I don't know
normal
how these people...
humanity.
I don't know how these people have the time to build this stuff up. But anyway, if, you know, if that's your passion, then you can do that. So, you know, not some kind of a huge, you know, revelatory deal, but I think they manage it well, efficiently. Oh, and I should also say, if someone is trying to threaten, you know, if someone gets mad, which often sometimes happens in poker, and they start swearing at you or things like that, there's a very active reporting feature where people mm-hmm. will be active, and then they'll... and they've done this. I had some guy once who was very angry and like threatened me after I'd won this poker thing, and they banned his chat and like banned him from the game for I think like 6 months, like immediately. So they're very serious about, you know, quickly doing these things. And since they don't know who you are anyway, you're just some random name and some avatar, it's not like they could ever do anything to you. But the point is, they're very actively trying to keep the game, you know, fun and not make it into something nasty. So I think they do a good job with that stuff. So
yeah.
So rating?
7.
Why 7? Better than the 7.
8.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, it's poker.
Okay, 8.
8.
Okay.
2 8s?
8.
A pair of 8s? Or a full house of 8s?
No, just 1 8.
Oh, okay, all right. That's fine.
We're not giving it more than one score.
88. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, an 8 out of 10 for Poker Stars.
So now on to our podcast segment.
Yes, our podcast segment, which is Planet Retcon Radio. You can find this at planetretcon.com.
Coming in January from planetretcon.com, The Log of the Crimson Lean.
There. New airlock control. We didn't have to pay a mechanic for it. These DIY kits are great.
What about those three parts?
What three parts?
These three parts. This square thingy, this round thingy, and this screw.
They're probably extras. They put in two of some things in case you break something.
Are you sure?
Sure, I'm sure. It's like that chair I bought for our dorm room in college. It had like 8 spare parts.
That chair fell apart when I sat on it. And this isn't a chair. It's our airlock.
The Log of the Crimson Lean. For more information, visit planetretcon.com. That's planetretcon.com.
This was a podcast which was submitted to us for review. Actually, a series of podcasts. And
so how many do they have?
Well, okay, so they've got a new one called The Log of the Crimson Lean. That's L-E-I-N, which I think they're just going to be starting. Then they've got the Stargate Cafe. And then I think they have a couple of other standalone shows. Like they had that, I think that umpire one we listened to was a standalone show, if I'm not mistaken. They had another one here called Abduction. That's another standalone. Mm-hmm. They have a couple of mini series. So they've actually, but I mean, at any one time, they've basically got two shows running. The Log of the Crimson Lean and the Stargate Cafe. Stargate Cafe is their big one. But they've had a couple, like the mini series that I just mentioned called Rendezvous. Okay. They've had a couple of standalone shows, and then they have a series of bloopers, which they've done as well. They've
bonus
been around
shows.
For a while, actually.
Okay. So we listened to quite a few of the shows because they're not very long. What would you say, 15 to 30 minutes?
Somewhere in there. I know that the umpire one was like 27 minutes, but that was a little bit long. Uh-huh. Normally they run like, maybe 15 minutes or so. Yeah.
Right. And it seems it's introduced as being created, directed, produced, written in many instances by...
Wesley Clifford, I believe is his name.
And the main focus is, I feel, is humor, right?
Yeah.
The main focus is it's a comical series. It'll either be comical sci-fi or it'll be comical, I guess, different kind of sci-fi.
Yeah, it's like
interactions. It will be comical.
Yeah.
Bloopers, it'll be comical. Just everyday concepts that
comical.
He can,
if you're familiar with the show Red Dwarf, which is one of Clea's favorites.
No, do not say it's anything like
I think
dwarf.
It is. It's I totally nothing think like it is. It. I don't agree.
Nothing like it at all. It's like the other... I'd say it's more like that other show we reviewed.
No, that's only... Yeah, Silent Universe. But that's only because... Yeah, but no. Because Silent Universe is not at all funny. It's not meant to be funny. It's supposed to be a serious audio drama. This reminds me a lot of the way that the Red Dwarf is.
No.
I know that's dealing with your sacred cow there, but I mean...
What is it like... How is it like Red Dwarf?
Because it makes silly jokes. Because it makes, you know, silly sort of sci-fi jokes. Because it comments about silly sci-fi things that are going on. I mean, you know...
It's a sci-fi comedy. That's the only thing it has in common with Red Dwarf.
Okay, I disagree.
However, I did actually like it. I found that I liked it a lot more than The Silent Universe. I don't know if it's because it's comical, and therefore you let a lot of things go, because I found it interesting, I found it entertaining, I wanted to hear more. The actors didn't seem to bother me as much. I don't know if that's because they weren't trying to do accents that then I noticed weren't good.
I don't know. I heard some pretty bad accents.
But, you know, when I first heard the promo, I was a little worried because the promo is a joke that's been done 50 million times of, oh, we just put together this thing. Oh, there's a few pieces that are missing. Oh, those aren't important. You know how they always package things with extra pieces. I mean, it's just like, yes, we've heard that joke 50 million times before. So I was a little nervous, but I liked it. I liked it. I found it entertaining. I found it as something that I wouldn't mind listening to when I'm doing my commute.
Can you give an example of that? Like an example of one of the things that you found amusing?
I won't say that it was... I wasn't like laughing all the time. I wasn't laughing really at all. But I found it engaging and I liked hearing it. I found the characters interesting.
Hmm.
In the cafe, for instance. I wanted to hear what happened to them. I liked the Empire thing. I thought it was you had to hear it all the way to the end. Greg had enough after 20 minutes and stopped. You have to hear it all the way to the end for it to kind of be funny and poignant. I didn't mind it.
Well, I did. I mean, I listened to it for 20 minutes and then I stopped and then I listened to the last 2 minutes. So I got the last thing.
So you did hear it.
Yeah.
Oh, never mind then. But,
yeah, it's interesting. I'm glad that you liked it and it's going to balance it out. I was not a huge fan, I have to admit. I found it boring. I found the umpire thing was really, really boring. I was listening to it on the way home, and I kept waiting for something to happen. And I was just like, okay, and basically it was Umpire is the standalone show that they do about replacing baseball umpires. And the first 20 minutes sounds like an advertisement for Questech, which is the new baseball thing that they already have in where they measure the strike zone. And I was trying to see what was particularly science fiction-y about this or what was different.
It's not science fiction. Yeah, well, that one's not. That one's present day, I think.
Well, okay, so, but it was supposed to be amusing then, I didn't know what the point was. It just felt like it was going on and on and on without a point. And I understood what the point was at the end. I was like, okay. But I don't think it was worth the 27 minutes of payoff. And I have to say that for the Stargate Cafe, I listened to the pilot and I listened a little bit to, I believe it was the second episode as well. I was not particularly interested in the characters. I mean, I thought the characters were very predictable. I didn't, you know, I sort of saw where they were coming from a mile away. I didn't think the acting and the accents were all that good, to be honest with you. I mean,
no,
I didn't
they
think
are.
They were really better than Silent Universe. But see, I hate to say all that because I understand what you're getting at. Like, it is, there's a kind of charm to the show.
Yeah,
and I certainly,
it's all been done. It's all standard.
Yeah.
There's nothing surprising, but I still like it. It's like, I like to read mystery novels, and most of them are pretty much the same. I know the characters, I know the red herrings, I know what's going on, but I like it. And that was the same with this, is I think for someone who likes standard, you know, fan sci-fi comedy shows, they're going to like it. It's well produced, it's well done, it's well written, it's basic.
Yeah.
It's average, but it does a good job.
I think partly what it may be with me, too, is that I really, unless the humor is particularly clever, I don't find sci-fi humor funny. I don't really find Red Dwarf that funny most of the time, which is why I think I also made the comparison, because I just find a lot of it is just very obvious and goofy, and I don't really go for obvious and goofy. So that's partly my own bias. I know that there's other, you know, people who find that very funny, and I will say that I think the production value, I mean, the sound effects, the use of, you know, how they sort of set the stories up, the fact that they've got an active cast. I mean, they clearly work hard on the show, and I know in particular that they've spent a lot of time developing. I mean, I admire the fact that they've got all these different shows going going at the same time.
Yeah.
They've got all the stars stuff going with Stargate, and they've got this other, you know, new show that they're launching. They seriously are legitimately a radio kind of podcast network. Like, they're trying to do a bunch of different
shows. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, and I really admire that. And, you know, I heard somebody say something about, he was talking about how someone had complained about one of the standalone, oh no, it was the bloopers, that they were complaining that they don't like the bloopers. I think the bloopers are fine. I think those are fun, that you have the bloopers set up as a separate thing to download. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, like, I don't understand.
I don't know why people would not like the bloopers.
The website has so much, just don't click on that.
Yeah, just don't click on the bloopers. But I think it was like, well, if it's there, then I'm going to click on it. You know, it's like, that's like a cheat code, you know? I know it's there. I can't resist. I think it's cool. I'm glad that they're willing to do bloopers.
It was fine.
But anyway, but I think that stuff is cool, and I have no problem with that at all. And certainly, Planet Retcon Radio has been very active, not only in the various podcasting things. I think it may have won a podcast peer award, if I'm not mistaken. But it was also, you know, very connected. Like, their website has immediate connections to all of the different feeds. It actually has a separate blooper feed, which I think is hilarious. Like, you could just go for bloopers directly. And then they're linked on Podcast Pickle and iTunes and Podcast Alley and all that kind of stuff. So they're very involved and engaged in it. I think their thing is, you know, very functional.
Yeah.
And they're very much connected into the sci-fi world and the sci-fi realm, which I think is very positive. You know, they're very connected into things like Battlestar Galactica. They know where their audience is.
Mm-hmm.
So all that stuff is very good. It's weird. I like all of the externals. I just don't care for the show that much. And I think that the only thing I can say about that is that not every show is for everybody. Like,
yeah.
I know, and I hate saying that too, because I know that the guy who had submitted it to us had said that he had started listening not only to our show, but to the MEP report. So I feel bad. Like, I don't, you know, I don't want to steer people the wrong way and say that this is not a show that's worthy of your attention. It's just not, it's not my thing. It just didn't float my boat.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that it's a bad show in and of itself.
No, I mean, I think that if you think you might like a sci-fi comedy, you should definitely go and listen to it and see whether or not it's your cup of tea.
Agreed.
I mean, I actually am going to have you do the rest of the cafe things on my thing so I can listen to the rest of them.
Oh, well, all right then. So see, so you definitely got one fan. I mean, one of us fans. Not that you don't have fans already.
I mean, it just, I don't mind listening to it. I mean, it was, you know, I got a commute going and I didn't find it boring. I mean, again, I found it many things obvious. I didn't find anything new, but I thought it was well done enough that it's kind of like to hear, and I want to hear what happens.
Well, there you go. Then I think that's true. I think the other thing I'd say is this. If you ever come up with a fantasy thing, you know, please let me know. Like, I think I like sci-fi, but fantasy
is
even better.
Sci-fi.
So if you do like a fantasy, like, you know, podcast, definitely let me know about that. That would be
cool. I don't know, Greg. I think you're going to have to venture out on your own.
Oh, no. All right. Well, I'll see. So what do you want to rate this, babe?
6.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't that a little, you don't think that's a little low?
No, that's above average.
Well, that's true. I would be inclined to rate it, it's odd. I just talked about how I didn't really care for the show, but I'd be inclined to rate it a 7. And the reason I'd be inclined to rate it a 7 is because of the breadth of offerings that they have and the number of different options they have of this kind. I'm trying to compensate for my bias. I don't want my bias to stand against it, because I feel like this is me reacting to the fact that I don't like sci-fi comedy, not so much, but you know.
We also read those negative reviews of it. There's a lot of people that have said that they don't like this.
Vox Monitor. If we ever reviewed Vox Monitor, if they hadn't vanished off the face of the earth, I would have something to say about them. I feel bad for Planet Retcon about that.
I'm fine with a 7.
Yeah, I would say a 7 out of 10, I think, because I really think that the show, despite my own concerns about it personally, that has nothing to do with, I think, the quality of the show overall. So I think it's worth a listen. Check it out. And let us know what you think.
Okay.
So that is going to do it for us for this week. We want to thank everybody for listening again, and encourage you to keep submitting stuff to us for review and having us check things out and giving us feedback, because we like all that good stuff.
Keep it coming,
and we will see you guys next week for episode number 27. But for episode 26, upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
Have a good one. The proceeding was a presentation of Upon Further Review, hosted at www.furtherreview.net. As usual, all rights are reserved. If you liked what you heard, please vote for us at podcastalley.com, vitalpodcast.com, and add us to your list of favorites at podcastpickle.com. You can leave us a comment at www.furtherreview.net, drop us a line at upon@furtherreview.net, or give us a phone call or send a fax to 206-339-UFR1. That's 206-339-8371. And lastly, don't be afraid to express your opinions. We know you have them. Let them out. Feel the power. Or you could just blindly accept whatever we tell you is fact. That'll work.
That was wonderful.
Bravo.
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good,
though. It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
I was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey, boo.
Boo.